Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here again in Hungary. The first time I came here was in 1999 when I got the UNESCO Science Prize, and I'm delighted to be here again and be meeting old friends. So my thanks to the Hungarian Academy of Sciences as well as to UNESCO for inviting me here. What I'm going to be doing is to tell you a little story of what can happen in a country in a period of 6 to 8 years if you put a mad chemist like me as a minister for science and technology and a minister for higher education. So it's a very interesting story, which I think some of you would enjoy. But before I go there, let me just focus on the changing landscape of science, which is the theme of this conference. We live in a world where seeds are no longer needed for growing plants. You have tissue culture. We are understanding the genetics behind salt resistance, and there are scientists who are transferring salt resistant genes into maize and wheat and rice so that they can use seawater for growing food crops. Some scientists have taken the genes from the firefly and transferred them into orchids, and lo and behold, you have luminescent orchids. You have cars running purely on air pressure, and India is going to launch a car, Tata, very soon, which was developed in France, which just has a Kevlar air cylinder at the back, and it is about the cost of running is about 10% of the cost of running it on fuels. You have aeroplanes flying without internal fuel, so if you take them to 12 times the speed of sound, they can use the oxygen present in the stratosphere and use that as fuel. And you have paralyzed people moving wheelchairs with thought control. They just wear a cap, nothing intrusive. They think, I want my wheelchair to go this way and it goes that way. I want my wheelchair to go this way and that it goes that way. Just thought. And you have the blind seeing with the tongue. Can you believe that? Blind seeing with the tongue. They just have a camera on their glasses, and this takes the optical signals, which are then transformed into electrical signals in a device in their pocket, and these electrical signals are then transferred into a lollipop-like device in their mouth. And this is known as VICAB. It was developed in Wisconsin in collaboration with the University of Pittsburgh, and this allows partial eyesight to be restored so that a blind person can distinguish between a knife and a fork and see the lift buttons. And you have cyborg beetles. This is a giant flower beetle, which is partly insect and partly robot. So it can be perched on your wall and can send signals and pictures several miles away. So the prime ministers of Jordan need to be careful in the future who the information is being transferred to. And of course, Her Royal Highness, the princess. And this is a nano machine made of molecules, just atoms, and this can run through your blood vessels and clear your blood clots. And so you have this strange world of science. You have this strange world of science where you have new discoveries and new changes taking place every year. And you have metamaterials. These are materials which bend the light around them. So if you wear a cloak of that metamaterial, you'll disappear. So it's a fiction coming true. In fact, they are developing these cloaking devices now for submarines and for aircraft. You have bulletproof paper, nanocellulose, which is bulletproof. And microorganisms have been used to transform cellulose to butanol. And so you can now run cars on old newspapers, because butanol you can use 100%. You don't need, like ethanol, you don't need to change the engines. You have stem cells, you have anti-aging compounds. Just about 8 or 9 months ago, some of the old young men like me might be pleased to hear this, where at the end of your DNA, there is a cap which is called, it is a cap, I don't want to go into the science, and as it erodes, finally the DNA itself starts eroding, and this is partly responsible for the aging process. Well, some people have discovered how to lengthen this cap, put this cap back on, and when they gave these materials, this natural compound, to aging mice, the mice became actually younger. So it reversed the aging process. So, and there are so many other things I could go on. We have already heard some of these things earlier on in the previous session where we had this fascinating discussion on the new areas and new technologies. Some of my recent work has been on the molecular basis of memory. When I say the word mother, what happens? So what molecules are involved? And we have proposed that it's hydrogen bonding taking place in the glycoproteins present in the hypothalamus of the human brain. So learning may be a process of the freezing of the conformational mobility of sugars present on the glycopeptides. It's a theory, not proved yet. But so when I was appointed as the Minister for Science and Technology, I convinced the government, President Musharraf specifically at the time, to give us 6,000% increase in the budget for science. And later on, when I was the Minister for Higher Education, about 2,500% increase in the budget for higher education. And I convinced the government at the time that it is not the job of the USA or Europe or other countries to train students in Pakistan. We have to put our money in our children. And we addressed the threefold issues of quality of education, access to higher education, and the relevance of education to national needs. Pakistan is a country with about 170 million people, and about 54% of them are below the age of 19. This is both a challenge and an opportunity. How do we unleash their creative potential? And how can we attract the brightest among them into education, into science, into research? Well, first of all, we have to excite young minds about the wonders of science, the kind of thing that I was talking about earlier and in the previous sessions. We have to select them and train them in at the top universities across the world. But then we often lose them. And so they won't come back through legal bonds. You have to create the enabling environment back home so that they are attracted back. Everybody wants to go back to their home country if there are opportunities. So creating an enabling environment means opportunities for research. It means access to literature, to journals, to instrumentation. It means good salaries. And it also means creating clusters, having others to talk to in your field so that you can discuss a problem seriously with others, so clustering. So Pakistan made a huge change, and we became the only country in the world probably where the salary of a professor became about five times the salary of a federal minister in the government. The salary of a professor in a university or in a research institute was increased so that it became five times the salary of a federal minister in the government. But we linked it to performance. Not everybody's salary was increased because paying weak people high salaries is just a wastage of money. So we said you'll be on contract with an international evaluation of your research output, first after 3 years and after 6 years, and then you will get tenure. So this, and we lowered the tax rates enormously, but most of our money that we got, we spent in training the brightest young students in top universities across the world. Because good universities are not about beautiful buildings, they're about beautiful minds. And this is something that we in the Middle East should learn. We have beautiful campuses in many of these oil-rich states, but they should learn from Harvard or Cambridge or Oxford. I spent some 9 years at Cambridge as a student and later as a fellow at King's College. Hundreds of years old buildings, but one of the persons we heard about, Fred Sanger, he got 2 Nobel Prizes, and from Cambridge have come about 70 Nobel Prizes just from one university. So we spent most of our money in young people, and this is where the money was spent, the blue, in just giving scholarships. And I'm glad that Dr. Mukhtar is here. We were working as a team together at the Higher Education Ministry, and we had a strong emphasis on quality assurance. I was also the Minister for Information Technology and Telecommunications, and we then therefore rapidly spread internet from 29 cities to some 2,000 towns, cities, and villages within a matter of 3 years, fiber from 40 cities to 1,000 cities. The internet usage exploded. These are the knowledge highways, far more important than the motor highways that we are used to traveling on. This commerce travels, knowledge travels, information travels. Brought the bandwidth cost down so that we became cheapest in the region. Mobile telephony exploded, and with this became the Pakistan Educational Research Network that connected all the universities with high-speed internet access, so 1 gigabit connectivity to every university, and then connections to 10 gigabit loops around the major cities, free access, so the universities paid nothing for this. And on this, we established our digital library, which provided about 20,000 international journals and about 60,000 textbooks free of charge to every student in every public sector university. And we started, because technology has opened up doors which didn't exist 10 years ago. It doesn't matter if you're in Stanford or in the room next door. You can, through video conferencing and through sophisticated versions of Skype, have access to live lectures from top professors across the world. And so we established our external distance learning program through which our students were enrolled exposed to lecturing from the top professors from Harvard or MIT and other places. The MIT open source website was created also in Pakistan. Placed an educational satellite in space, ParkSat-1, and the university access exploded. Within a matter of 6 or 7 years, there was a tripling of enrollment in the higher education sector. There was more than a doubling of universities from 59 to 135 universities. The gender, green is the men and the red are the women, evened out to a difference of only 3 or 4%. And but the most striking fact that happened was a 600% increase in ISI abstracted publications and a 1,000% increase in citations over a matter of 4 years. This is after removing the self-citations. This is the graph of the international research publications, ISI publications. Pakistan was stagnant. A nuclear country like Pakistan with 180 million, you had only 500 or 600 publications till about 2000 or 2001. And then the change started coming. Last year, we have now touched over 5,000 publications, which still is small, but it is fantastically growing very high. It's about 20% to 30% year on year increase in research publications in international journals, because the universities are ranked internally. They have to compete externally also. The PhD output within 7 years was about the same as in the previous 57 years. And in the world university rankings, we have now several universities which are coming up. For instance, the National University of Science and Technology in Islamabad is 273. UET at Lahore is 281. And there have been reports published by the World Bank, by USAID, by the British Council, and 4 editorials in Nature about what I was doing. The first was this headed this paradox of Pakistan, this strange country with terrorism and bombings and torn by all these strifes. And in this, you have this wonderful program on higher education. Again, there was another editorial on after Musharraf, which said that you should not go back to the Stone Age. And the last editorial I took as a gift on my birthday, because 22nd September 2010 was my birthday, and it talked about me. And in fact, I was amused by the fact that I was called a force of nature, whatever that means. And there were many prizes. The TWAS Prize in Durban was given for the work that we did. The Royal Society came out with a booklet called A New Golden Age, and it quoted the United Nations Commission Science and Technology and Development Chairman, Professor Rode, in which it said that Pakistan is the best practice model to be followed in other developing countries. Interestingly, in Hindustan Times, there was an article, Pak Threat to Indian Science, by Neha Mehta, and it talked about a presentation made to the Indian Prime Minister about the Pakistan's progress and that it may soon join China in giving India serious competition. But that's, of course, media hype. What we need to do is Pakistan and India need to work together. We have so much to work for. We have similar problems. And so, in fact, I, as the president of the Pakistan Academy of Sciences, had invited my Indian counterparts, and I'm delighted that many of them are here, the president of INSA and their colleagues, and they are going to be visiting Pakistan in January. I'll be personally receiving and welcoming them, and we hope to develop strong bridges, at least in science, between India and Pakistan. And this investment is now paying back a millionfold. Some students who came back formed a company and they won a contract for $250 million in the IT area. This is just a civil award from Austria. And I'll end by showing this last picture. Students, 12 students, we picked them up, sent them to an international Olympiad in mathematics, physics, chemistry, and biology. And three of them came back with medals, two with silver medals and one with bronze medal. So ultimately, this is the future. So if countries in the Middle East, in Pakistan, the OIC member states, need to move forward, they have to remember that their real wealth lies in their children. And they have to invest in them, unleash their creative potential, and provide them with opportunities to serve, because then the sky is the limit. So the way forward, ladies and gentlemen, is education, education, and education. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing.